Okay, thank you, Engelbert, for a very thorough paper with very thorough econometrics. And I don't surprisingly want to take any big issue with it. And some of what I want to say, I guess, is slightly by way of almost devil's advocate and trying to probe you a bit of what your answers to, I guess, what might be a mainstream response would be. And some of which is by way of probing you, I think, of a few directions we could think to go slightly further with this. I suppose one way to start would be another way of kind of quite what the big story is here. If you start with the, I think your first diagram, what's happened to unemployment rates in the EU15, what we see has happened is that whilst just before the crisis, the latter part in 2000, unemployment rates in the EU15 and so on had not got back to the levels of the post-war golden age, they were still at sort of 20-year lows, and there'd be substantial improvements in unemployment compared to the highs over the previous 20 years. Of course, that's all been it's been increasingly reversed now with the crisis, but on the eve of the crisis, 20-year lows. So I guess the big picture here, putting words in your mouth, I guess the big picture here is that what happened over that 20 years, we moved from a situation of 20 years before real interest rates at levels that were unprecedented in post-war times, not quite unprecedented historically, but certainly in post-war times, down to real interest rates that were comparable to the sorts of levels in the post-war golden age. So I suppose, I mean, is that in a sense the big picture, the big story as to what's changed here? I'm slightly intrigued actually in a sense as how sure you can quite separate the real interest rate effect and the capital accumulation effect. You say somewhere in the paper that investment often doesn't appear to be econometrically terribly sensitive to interest rates, and certainly we know from econometrically, if you're talking about Bank of England, whoever, nudging it up or down 0.5%, that doesn't take to make any great difference to people's firms' investment plans. But the sorts of change in real interest rates between the sort of 20-30 year period you were looking at is more than marginal. I guess part of what I'm sort of intrigued to probe you a bit here is an alternative story which I don't buy, and I'm sure you don't buy, but in terms of in terms of your results, how you go about refuting this. There is a story which I guess independently has risen both through some of the mainstream thinkers here like Blanchard, but also I guess independently from certain more or less Marxist economists, which goes like this. The standard mainstream view, implicitly or explicit in these studies, is the elasticity of substitution between capital and labour is unity, and therefore you can rule out capital stock effects on unemployment. Some studies that's more or less explicit, other places is implicit. Some of the studies you're drawing on, as you pointed out, from people like Bob Rothel, late Andrew Glynn, Restis and Sawyer and so on, say that for all sorts of reasons that's implausible. Elasticity of substitution between labour and capital is significantly less than unity. If that holds in a sense your home and dry, capital stock effects will affect the levels of unemployment. There's an alternative approach which is to say, at least over the medium run, for the countries that one's concerned about having the wrong labour market institutions, the elasticity of substitution has actually exceeded one. And what happened was, in response, particularly the 80s, in response to high labour costs, both directly from wages and indirectly from these labour market institutional effects, was that firms substituted away from labour towards capital, leading to both, if that setup works, to both higher unemployment and a rising capital share in income. And indeed, some versions of this go even further and say this partly explains increased inequalities within the workforce. Some more skilled and educated workers were essentially complementary to that new capital stock. Others were much more easily replaceable. Now, more or less implicitly embedded in your analysis is what I guess you would have as a refutation of that. But I'd like to kind of sort of more, perhaps throw you out a bit more explicitly on how you would go about tackling that story. As I say, not only does it sort of appear in Blanchard and others have written papers of this form, but there is, I guess, more or less independent literature. Dumanil and Levy, the French Marxists, for example, I interpret them as more or less saying, coming out with this, this hypothesis that there was effectively labour-saving capital accumulation leading to unemployment in economies like France in the 80s. You mentioned in passing, and in one sense I think it's quite legitimate to mention in passing, in your presentation and your results, product market competition effects. I raise this not because I think it's desperately important, but because in both mainstream academic circles, and perhaps even more, as far as I can detect, in policy circles, the European Commission, this seems to be the way to go at the moment. If you turn around and say, well, look at country X, it reformed its labour market, with or without inverted commas, and didn't actually seem to do a lot for unemployment. The response these days seems to be, at most, a kind of nuanced interaction effect. Well, you want to look at the interaction between labour market and product market reform, and they tend to work well together. And I guess some story that in the limit, if you have regulated, protected product markets and you deregulate the labour market, there's a danger that a lot of that would simply just shift rents from the workforce to capital. But even more, it seems to be in European Commission-associated policy circles, the blame for everything now is product market, lack of product market competition. I mean, in all seriousness, what's gone wrong in peripheral Eurozone countries? If you turn around and say, what are you talking about, lack of product market competition? What's the single market? The response is, oh, well, OK, we've done that in manufacturing. We haven't really done it in services. And that's what's leading to unemployment. That's what's meaning to the reforms that have been undertaken in the labour market haven't had their effects. This is, in all seriousness, a policy the in policy circles promoted. And again, interested in your comments on that particular line of things. The final area that I'd like to kind of raise really at two levels is the question of institutions and where we're sort of quite at this. In a sense, you can look at this in two levels. It's a relatively narrow econometric level, but a wider sort of conceptual and policy sense. In one sense, for everything you've said, perhaps it's not desperately surprising that you don't get a lot of traction with institutions. We know there are all sorts of problems with measuring the labour market institutions. Then you might want to ask other econometric questions. Are we really sure the impact of any of these variables will be linear? We've got things like OECD measures of employment protection legislation. Is that a linear scale? I don't think so. I don't think they pretend it to be. One can imagine conjure up all sorts of econometric issues about why this might be problematic. And so there's that sort of issue. But I think there's a kind of wider issue. What are we saying here about institutions? There's a folk wisdom, not just in policy in mainstream circles, but in less mainstream circles. There's a sort of hardline mainstream view, which is the only way to go is to deregulate of Anglo-Saxon-style labour markets. And that's certainly promoted in some quarters. There's a slightly softer one, but in fairly mainstream circles, which goes, there are two possible routes. You can have Anglo-Saxon deregulated labour markets. That will give you low unemployment, albeit at the expense of high levels of wage and inequality. Or you can go the Nordic social democracy route, and you can get low unemployment about that, but it's very expensive and without the same levels of inequality. But it's pretty expensive in terms of tax terms. You have to accept quite high levels of taxes, and possibly that has longer-term negative growth impacts. Anything else in terms of institutions is not compatible with low levels of unemployment. You have to make institutional choices to get there. At more fundamental level, are you veering towards saying here that you just don't buy that, that it's actually possible to deliver with the right sort of broad economic variables that you've discussed on the Keynesian and capital accumulation sense, that in principle you can deliver reasonable levels of unemployment, with a whole range of institutional arrangements. A whole range of institutional arrangements are actually actually compatible with that. Because there's been a tradition, I say, not just in the mainstream literature, but in all sorts of more non-stream mainstream literatures, of trumpeting particular alternative models. But it's more or less implicitly saying there are certain models that work and others that don't. And the model tends to vary, you know, more Sweden some time ago. Latterly, it's been Danish flex security. Any guesses who will be next year? You know, and Germany's looking quite good at the moment again, having not looked good for a while, and so on. But I wonder if I can push you, in a sense, to say that perhaps that entire approach is not quite the right one, and it is quite possible to achieve low levels of unemployment with a range of institutions, or would that be pushing you too far? I don't want to hog the discussion. Yeah. So those are my more substantive points.